The following presentation is the audio of one of five webinars on practical social networking presented by Ian Griffin and Jim Carrillo in September 2009. A recording of the complete series of webinars, which includes the visual element of the screen referenced in this audio-only version, is available for purchase at socialnetworking101.biz.
Well, this is the next in the series on practical social networking. It's the third. We have covered so far an introduction and LinkedIn and Facebook. Today we're going to talk about websites and blogging, next week about podcasting and YouTube, and then Twitter. This seminar, or this webinar, will address some of the aspects of how websites and blogs really have merged together. They used to be two separate things. Let's take a look at the agenda. Okay, we're going to be talking about the differences and similarities between websites and blogs. Then we'll review blogs and how they fit into social media as a whole. Then Jim will go into a deep dive on the mechanics of blogging. This is what some people think is the sort of real barrier or hurdle that they have to overcome, but really isn't that difficult when you've seen it explained and seen some screenshots that we'll show you. I'll come and talk about what kind of content, as you're blogging, it's all very well to have a platform and have a blog with your name on it, but what do you say each week and each day, not necessarily going to blog every day, but how do you keep fresh content coming and grow your audience? And then finally, we'll share some practical applications to do with blogging. So what you'll learn in this class is, first of all, why blogs really are the hub of social networking. Next, we'll discuss how you get started, how to write blogs that people will want to read and grow that following. We'll talk about a few ways to promote your blog, and we'll, as you see throughout the webinar, be sharing why we love WordPress.
All right, and I'll jump right into just the simple discussion of websites versus blogs. And Ian, I have to say, even on a conversation that you and I were having with the customer this morning, this is the most often asked question. What's the difference between a website and a blog? And I'm hoping that within the next 5 to 10 minutes, you'll be able to answer this question yourself, and there will never be any more confusion. Well, let's start off with the myth, or at least what people think the difference is between websites and blogs. Most people think websites are fixed, that they're static HTML pages, that you probably have to pay somebody a lot of money to get a website, or you have to maybe have a special webmaster managing it for you. And as this new concept of search engine optimization has come out in the last few years, most people think that websites are search engine optimization challenged or SEO challenged, and you have to pay a marketing company a lot of money to get your website up to par. Now, on the other hand, people have come to know this word blogs as this fluid thing, something that could be dynamically updated and that are even free. You can get this stuff for free. And because they're so easily updated, maybe blogs are SEO friendly. And so people sometimes think, I'm going to abandon the concept of a website, instead go to a blog, especially because it's free. Well, let's see how those are myths and kind of see what's gone on in the past few years. The first thing is this new revolution happened in probably around the 2000 timeframe. It's called Web 2.0. Now, I think the reason why they call it Web 2.0 is because Web 1.0 crashed in the year 2000, and they needed a new name for it. And so it's just like a second release of an application. And what it really means, though, from a design perspective and a content perspective, is that things are much simpler. From a design perspective, you're going to see things that are really easy to look at. This MSN site is not an example of a Web 2.0 website. This is cluttered information all over the place. We have everything from looking at your Hotmail account to your MSN directory. There's yellow pages. We've got advertising. It's confusing. But MSN was able to establish their framework of customers before this whole concept of Web 2.0 took off. And so their customers are used to this, and they don't have to worry about changing. So don't look to MSN as a sample of how you would like to manage your system. Now, from a content perspective, Web 2.0 means that there's interaction on the website. So it's not just some page of information that you're going to look at, but it's something that you can engage with. A blog is a classic example of a Web 2.0 website, because with a blog, if it was my blog, I might be able to post an article, and you, as a visitor, could comment on that article and have your comments viewed by other people. So now there's interaction. Let's see if I can show you a Web 2.0 site that's visually oriented. And what you'll see on this site is the graphics are much simpler. I mean, the picture of the sheep, very simple graphics, not too detailed. Much different than what we saw in that early 2000 timeframes when everything was, you know, high-tech, synaptics type of googly goo. Now it's simple, very clean. Google was actually the company that started this whole simpleness of websites and this simple feel. The Web 2.0, from Google's perspective, was they wanted to have a very clean page that people viewed. Now, in the early days of Google, there was actually a group of people that counted the number of characters that were on the front page of Google. And every time Google added another word or character, this group would send Google a message and keep them in check. And that gave Google this mission to maintain their simpleness. And that's why you really haven't seen Google change. Now, Google's moved also into the Web 2.0 in regards to content by creating that iGoogle concept. And if you haven't seen that, I'll highlight it up here for you. iGoogle is a way that you can customize Google to fit your needs. So you can have weather on your front page. You can have your email all pop up on your front page. And it's a real interactive way of engaging with Google. This is what people normally think of when it comes to web pages. They think HTML. And if you went to the community college class that I went to, or the community center class, you might have taken that HTML class and thought, hey, I can do my own web pages, only to realize that all you can do is create pretty ugly-looking web pages. And every time you wanted to change it, it involved learning some new HTML tag, uploading a file to some server that was God who knows where, and it was just absolutely confusing. This is what wasn't sustainable about the Internet. Things had to change. And as a matter of fact, the developers that were, in a sense, building the Internet or the World Wide Web knew that it had to change, and they created a new concept of web pages. They knew that HTML had to be used, but instead of creating HTML pages, they created these dynamic web engines. And another term for that you might have heard out there is called content management engines, or content management systems, I should say. Now, these are like the slice-o-matic of websites. They chop, they dice, they cut, and they do everything that you would ever want to do, and they literally create the HTML for a website anytime somebody asks for it. Now, that's a big shift in the way things are done. So that means my website doesn't exist until you literally ask for a page. And when you ask for a page, I got this little Splice-O-Matic engine out there that creates the web page for you.
Well, that sounds complicated, but I'll take your word for it.
It is. And you almost have to look at it like the Wizard of Oz and say, I don't care who's behind the curtain. Let the wizard do his thing. I just know that it's gotten a lot easier. And these are the companies that started it or have basically led the pack. Blogger is one of them. It's a great blog website. Joomla is a content management website. TypePad, a blog system. And WordPress, a blog and website system. In the early days when this stuff started coming out, it was really hard to get people to understand that websites can be updated instantaneously, that they can literally change at the drop of a hat. And so these companies, especially WordPress and Blogger, they focused on the people that they knew would understand it. And these were people that were journaling online or creating a web log. In other words, they were creating their blogs. And so by marketing to these people, these content management systems became known as blog systems. Not because it couldn't be used for a website, but because that was who was buying it and who was willing to engage with it. Here's an example of one of those companies, and Ian and I both use this one. This is WordPress.org. Now, this is just an example. We're not saying that it's any better than the others, although Ian and I both do prefer it. WordPress is a state-of-the-art publishing platform with a focus on aesthetics, web standards, and usability. And it's free. This is the beauty of the new concept of the Internet. So many things are free, kind of like this webinar. Now, WordPress was known for blogs, but look how Ford uses WordPress. Ford, a major corporation, uses WordPress for one of their product websites, specifically their global auto shows.
Now, wait a minute, Jim. This is a website, not a blog.
That's right.
This is built in WordPress as well?
So here's the big to-do. Here's the big answer. There literally is no difference between a website and a blog. They're both built on the same systems, and they're both generated from these dynamic web page generators. The only difference, and I'll show you that in just a second, is what the home page looks like. So this right here is a website built on WordPress, the blog system. And here's a wonderful looking site. Actually, it's my blog. And what you might notice that's different about this site from the others is that the first thing that you see when you go to my blog is there's an article that has a date. And next week, you're going to see a brand new article, and it pushes all these articles down. So what differentiates a blog and a website is what you decide to put on that first page. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't have a blog on a website. As a matter of fact, this is a website by a gentleman in an association we're in called Tom Drews is his name, and he works with What Works Communication. You'll notice that right here, he has got an integrated blog. But this is a website because his first page is a simple information page. And so what he's done is built this on WordPress. It doesn't matter whether it's a blog or a website, exactly the same system as I'm using for my blog. It just is that first page is different. And then some people think, well, I don't want to use a system that is based on templates. The whole concept of Web 2.0 is moving away from wowing people with graphics, and it's more interested in intriguing people with content. Craigslist, large company, can definitely afford to build a great-looking website, but they use WordPress. And not only do they use WordPress, they use the default settings on WordPress. So the bottom line, a blog is a website. Don't let anybody fool you. The only question that you need to ask yourself is, do I want my first page to show the post that I've written, or do I want my first page to show some information about my company?
And Jim, just before you go into to reinforce then what you're saying, a blog is a website, and you said on that list that it's dynamic, not static. In the old days, people used to have webmasters sort of hold them to ransom and say, yeah, if you can change this, look at the first page, but we'll need a couple of $100 retainer to make, you know, this look like that. With it being based on a blog, it's going to be pretty easy to update.
And I'm going to rephrase what you said. Instead of with it being based on a blog, you mean with it being based on this content management dynamic web system?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. A website is as easy to update as a blog, and I'll definitely show that in the next 5 minutes.
Great.
So websites are blogs. Just let that question go. Simple is the new look. Don't get hung up on these complex graphics. And make sure that you're using some form of a dynamic site, whether it's TypePad, WordPress, Blogger. You don't want to have to be coding in HTML anymore, and you don't want to pay anybody to do that for you either. And we love WordPress for the concept of spare parts, because there are so many developers around the world that not only will do it for low cost, but they also give free plugins to WordPress, like e-commerce plugins, and it's no cost.
That's great. Well, before we jump into the next section on the agenda, which is I'll talk about blogs and social media, I just want to acknowledge we've had a lot of dialogue on the comments line already. Craig said just a very second ago, after hearing Jim talk, that another big difference between traditional web pages and blog pages, and those built with the content management tools like WordPress, is that the content management tools on WordPress are much more easily searchable by the search engine, and that is very true. I think the statistics that show that building your site in a WordPress engine or another content management system around blogging gets it higher up in the Google rankings. I'm not sure of all the mechanics of that, but it does it. It seems to do it pretty effectively. So what we're going to be talking about now for a few minutes is the more general world of social media or social networking that the whole webinar series is about. And I would argue that if you have a blog, it really is the hub of your social media enterprise. What I mean by that is this is definitely the way I use my blog on professional speaking. I've got a blog called Professionally Speaking. If you want to find it, just Google that word or Google Ian Griffin's blog, and it'll come up. I guess that Google ranking's working for me. I'm number one for those two search terms. And I basically update that sometimes twice a day. Sometimes it goes for a week, and I don't do anything. I'm not really systematic about it. But over 4 years, 4.5 years, I've done about 500 postings. And those postings, that content, never goes away. It's archived on the blog engine. You can search within the blog. You can search in Google for certain terms, and up comes the blog content. And then my Facebook, my LinkedIn, my Twitter, and I could set up other accounts on other social networks, are like outposts. So if you go from the hub on this wagon wheel, that would be where the axle is. If you imagine that's my universe of blog content, each spoke goes out to an outpost where the thing is, nobody, I can't assume that the whole of the web universe that I could connect with necessarily wants to connect through my blog. Some of them never leave Facebook. So what I do is I have my blog postings automatically reflected to Facebook as a brief update. Same with LinkedIn. If you go to my LinkedIn profile, I think we touched on this last week, you'll see I've got my blog entries, like the last three of them, display on my profile. With Twitter, I can tie in blog postings there as well, although I actually haven't done that myself. So if you have a blog, if you don't have a blog, it's not the end of the world, because you can do all your updates as 140 characters through Twitter. It's just you're not going to be as verbose as some others are with blogs. But it is a hub. It's multimedia. You can embed photographs. You can embed YouTube videos. You can embed podcasts. And these are all things I like to do. So I really just spend a lot of time on my blog knowing that these outposts like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube are being updated by my blog activity. And the thing about a blog is it lives on the World Wide Web, www. It's called the World Wide Web because it's worldwide. And just like this magazine store, you've probably been to magazine stores in the big cities in San Francisco and New York where you get all of those fascinating foreign magazines, you know, the Italian home interior decorating ones and the German whatever and the Asian ones. Well, the blog that you have lives in the world of a universe of blogs that are written in many, many languages. So you really can very easily have a global presence through a blog. And in fact, if you look at this report that I've had automatically run from the Google Analytics search engine that I've installed on my blog, it's a simple process that you can either hire a consultant to do or follow the outline in Google Analytics. You'll see on this map, I've had over the period of, what was this, about a month from early July to early August, 2,800 visitors from 1,000 cities around the world. Majority West Coast, East Coast in the U.S., with a lot of them in the Midwest here, up through, I guess, what is this, Calgary and Banff, over to the U.K. where I was born, and a number of people read my blog from there. But then even out through Australia, New Zealand, and Asia. Now, some of these are going to be whatever they call spiders, just coming in from the search engines that might be located in those cities. But as I look into Google Analytics, I can see that many visitors, some pages like the one I wrote analyzing President Obama's acceptance speech, were I think an average of six and a half minutes per visitor who looked at that page. So I definitely feel reassured that I've got this global presence with my blog. The key thing about blogs and social media is, though, that just like anything, you can have a blog about whatever occurs to you every morning when you wake up, but it's far better to be niched. Just like professional speakers know, it's not good to speak on everything. It's good to be speaking on a topic. They say the best niche is an inch wide and a mile deep. And I just did some searching in the world of blogs for, you know, off-the-wall kind of odd niche blogs out there. Well, the American Button Machines Company has the button blog. What has it got? It's got lots of postings about and comments from people who are just fascinated by buttons. There are people out there, believe me, who just live and breathe buttons. I used to live in Minnesota. I thought the whole state was filled with Lutherans and so on from Norway and Scandinavian families, but there are some atheists in Minnesota, and guess what? They've got a blog to, you know, be a forum where they can meet. Not to make light of anybody's medical problems or whatever, but I looked up phobias. Of course, there's blogs for the common phobias like fear of open spaces, fear of heights, because apparently I'd never heard of it before, a fear of surfaces, textures. I guess some people don't like to touch silk or rough surfaces. And there's a blog on that where they can share their experiences. Over in Massachusetts, which is a notoriously liberal state, of course, where Kennedy was from, who just passed away, there are some conservatives in Massachusetts. There's probably an even smaller number of conservative feminists. Maybe that's a contradiction. I don't know. It's not for me to say. But they have a blog. There are blogs for people who are fascinated by model trains. And this one, Needles and Pins, is for people who like to do homemade. But it's actually in French. So this is French language blog on sewing. There's blogs out there on every single topic that you can think, and one of the first things I'd advise you to do if you don't have a blog and you have a certain area that you're interested in is go search for and find blogs in your area of expertise. One of the members of our National Speakers Northern California chapter blogs under a pseudonym, and she's the authority on dating over 40. And she's had a blog for about 3 years called The Dating Goddess, and she's managed to accumulate so much content that she's actually published books based on the content of her blog. In fact, over 15 books. So the niche aspect of the blog and the way it fits into identifying you as an expert in your chosen niche is incomparable. Here's the Dating Goddess again, and she's tied into Twitter. Not very actively, she's only got 100 followers, but it's that outpost, and she lists the books there that have come out of her blog. So the things to remember about blogging and social media overall, I would say there's a strong argument to be made for those of you who do have a blog, or if you're considering one, go ahead, because it really can be the hub of your social media. It's global in reach, and it's going to be the reason, by the way, we didn't go into this because this is kind of an introductory level course, the reason that works so effectively is because blogs are what's called syndicated. You might have heard of the term RSS, stands for really simple syndication. Just like AP Newswire stories are syndicated out to thousands of news outlets around the world, your blog is syndicated to readers, and they can subscribe so they get your updates whenever you make them. I would definitely say you should niche your blog, find a focus, and go deep into that. My blog is on professional speaking. As a speech writer, I comment on and observe everybody from the President of the United States to local executives to members of our National Speakers Chapter, and I write reports on presentations I go to, I write book reviews. All in all, over 4 years, I've developed quite a consolidated, dense set of information, and Google returns my blog in the searches. In fact, if you look for my name, Ian Griffin, in Google, the thing that comes up makes me number one, the number one Ian Griffin, for what that's worth, is my blog. You see, it returns that blog. So, and finally, as I said, it's the hub in the wheel, so that you can integrate the blog with all the other forms of social networking that we talked about and we will talk about on this webinar series. So, Jim, we have a quiz. A poll.
We do have a poll, yeah. We're going to keep the quiz to the end, and we're going to be grading it and turning in the results to the local high school.
Okay.
But what we'd like to know is, how engaged are you with blogs? And in regards to reading and checking them out, if you can let us know kind of where you're at in the system.
So do you never read blogs? Select one of these. Do you check in with a few now and then? Do you have some that you refer to regularly? Or is it a weekly or even daily routine for you? This is not, do you have a blog, but how often do you read them?
All right, looks like we've got the majority of people voting, so I'm going to close the poll in about 5 seconds, 4, 3, and closing the poll now. Let me see what the results are.
Well, let's see. Well, there's a quarter of you never read blogs. That's interesting. Maybe we should have emphasized this more, and bad for me for not doing it. But even if you have never used and don't intend to have your own blog, just do a search in Google, go to Other, and you'll see there's a choice to highlight where it says blogs. You can search blogs. The more sophisticated, you can use blog readers. But check out what's being said on there. Go to my blog.
Yeah, that's right.
Look back. Go to Jim's blog, and you'll see it's a great way of getting some content that's really consolidated.
Yeah, and I have to admit, it took me a while to find the blogs that were worth it for me to follow. But once I did, I do get a lot of education off of them. All right, so now I'd like to share with you how easy it is to manage a blog and a website. And what I hope to do with this section is to save you all a ton of money if you're paying anybody to update your website, because it really is within the grasp of each and every one of us. Now, if you use WordPress, and we're going to use this as a demonstration because this is what our systems are built on, you get a simple login page, something like this, with your WordPress account. Now, both Ian and I use GoDaddy, but you can use many different hosting packages or accounts to put your WordPress blog on or WordPress website. All right, so when we get to this login page, WordPress has tried to make it really simple for us, and they said, well, we're going to give you a nice little dashboard in the center here. And in that dashboard, we're going to show you what's going on right now, some recent comments, and down here we've got some news from WordPress. And you know what? All that stuff's nice, but that gets a little bit confusing for me. The reality is I don't even look at that center area. Just too much information for me. All I do is look at this area right here on the left-hand side. So that's really what we're going to talk about. If I were to start off by looking at the post area, I can click on it and drop it down, and I see a little drop-down list. And I can do the same thing for pages. This is how easy it is to create a new page on your website. Now, most people, and when they got their website developed, your web developer or webmaster probably said to you, how many pages do you want? And I have no idea. So you came up with a number like 5, and they quoted you, okay, well, it's $200 per page, so you pay $1,000. With this new era of web development and Web 2.0, the difficulty in adding a page on a website is as hard as clicking the button that says Add New, and that's it. So if you're paying anything more than $5 for someone to click a button, then you're paying too much. Otherwise, you need to get yourself on WordPress. Let's take a look at if I wanted to add a new post, and say I wanted to write something. I'm going to click on this little Add New right under Posts, and this screen pops up. Now, you'll notice that they tried to emulate what an email system looks like. So you have a subject area at the top or a title. We have an area where we can type our message in, and we also have little icons that we can click on to format our text. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to type in the title of my post, send pictures from a camera without wasting bandwidth. You'll notice that it's kind of hard to type your message in this little area. So there's a little slanted lines right here in this corner, and if you click on that and pull it down, you can actually expand that box. So it's really easy to use. It's not difficult to play with. And what I like to do is I just like to cut and paste right from Word. And so that's how I'm able to get my text in very quickly. So I get my text in there, and then it's now time for me to kind of make this a little interactive. So let's say I wanted to provide a link on this download here, and I want people to be able to click that link so they can download this application I'm talking about. So I'd highlight the words that I want to turn into a link, and there's this little picture of a chain link. I click on that picture, and it opens up this information box, and it asks me for the URL of where I want it to link to. So I type in the URL, and I can leave the rest as a default. I click on the Insert button, and now I've got a link. And that's as difficult as it is to make this completely interactive.
So, Jim, what you just did seemed pretty simple. Is it just as simple to kind of embed, like, photos and images, or is that, like, another complete complex level?
All right. So I remember Ian was one of those gentlemen that was used to the Web 1.0 days when I first met him, and he would have asked that question exactly like that. Do you see this little square right there that I just highlighted? That
yeah.
is the picture upload. This little thing right here is the music upload. And so if you clicked on that picture upload, it's just going to ask you where do you want to get the picture from, and you select it from your hard drive and go on like that. There's no more uploading files to some type of web server or anything like that. It's very simple and interactive. On the right-hand side over here, I wanted to show you some things. Just like in your email, you don't have to send the email when you're done. You can save it as a draft, so you can work on it later. If you wanted to, right here, this says that you're going to publish it immediately. What I do is I click that Edit button, and I change it to a future date. And that way I'm basically scheduling when this comes out to make it look like I'm busy. So when my boss is checking my website, he'll say, hey, Jim's working hard today.
Mm-hmm.
Great way to kind of fool that system. Now, this is what that particular post looked like when I was done with it. Now, the one thing that you weren't able to scroll down and see was this, how I added this little video. But that's really nothing more than copying the code off of YouTube. On YouTube, it said embed code. Just copied it and pasted it right into that WordPress, and it added that. But you can see how I have that download it here link, and it's a fully interactive, and it was a simple-to-do post on my webpage.
That's great. Now, where would you keep the photographs that you embed in the blog? Would those be on a server, or would they be on your own website?
Okay, so this concept of WordPress and the way the developers created it was, they said, we don't think people should have to worry about that. And so what I'll tell you what's going on, but I don't want you to worry about it. What's going on behind the scenes is this WordPress application or dynamic web creator has a database in the background where it's holding all the text, and it has this file space in the background where it stores all the files. And
right.
It keeps track of where all the files are and all the information is.
Right.
Now, I did see a comment on this one, that WordPress doesn't work good with Microsoft,
MySQL.
Yeah, MySQL, there you go. And that might be the case. I try to not use the Microsoft system.
Well, without getting all geeky, it uses a PHP
right.
database. So it's not
there you go. Yeah, so you're right, I'm getting a little bit too geeky, and it's way too much for this one. Just know that WordPress and these other systems were intended to manage that all for you, so you don't have to think about that.
But the obvious point is the photographs don't live on your own PC. Otherwise, when you switch your PC off, they wouldn't be available. So they're put up somewhere on the Internet by WordPress.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. That's exactly right. Now that I go over, and remember how I expanded the post area? This time I'm going to click the Edit button, and you'll see all the list of my posts. And you can see that I have now a post called Send Pictures from the Camera Without Wasting Bandwidth. So if I notice that I had a spelling mistake, I can click the Edit button, and I can go right back in there and edit it. Now, we talk a lot about WordPress and blogs and websites being dynamic and that they're able to change instantaneously. That doesn't mean that they have to change instantaneously. So just because you have a dynamic website doesn't mean that it has to be updated every day. As a matter of fact, I have a company website for my consulting company, which is LMCI Consulting, and the main pages of those website only change maybe once a year as we redefine our missions and change our practices. So their content is relatively static, even though it has the possibility of being updated instantaneously. And so that, you know, just keep that in mind. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you have to. So here's the things that I'd like you to know when managing or updating your own website or blog post. All you have to do is worry about these areas called New and Edit. Leave the other stuff alone. Think email. Everything is kind of being generated around the concept of what we do on a daily basis. So you're going to create a new email. Instead of sending it, you're going to publish it. You can still add pictures just like you do an email. You can format the text in the exact same way. And just start simple. If you're starting out on a blog, write a few sentences. Don't worry about creating, you know, these long, drawn-out paragraphs. Just identify, hey, I'm listening to a webinar on social networking. That'd be perfect. And the three words I want you to remember are words that I've taken from somebody else's campaign, but yes, you can.
So we have a quiz, a poll. I keep on saying quiz. It's a poll. Let's find out, are you ready to manage your own website and blog based on what you've seen Jim outline? So select one, okay, you'll never do it. Two, it looks simple, but you'll have a virtual assistant or farm it out to somebody to help. Looks like you might be able to manage it yourself, or you're already up there. You're already managing your own website and blog. Let's leave that for a few seconds. Give people a chance to click on one of those.
All right, and I'm going to count it down from 3 seconds, 2 seconds, and 1 second, and I'll go ahead and close the poll right now. And let's see what the results look like.
Wow. Well, it looks like, Jim, you were pretty persuasive. Nearly 65% think they can manage it. 5% hold out, never do it, which is interesting because we had a large percentage who never even read blogs. So to convince a lot of the audience that they can actually do this themselves is good. And then 20% of you. So there's still 1 in 5 are doing this themselves. I think what Jim and I would encourage to do everybody says, yes, you can. You know, you can all do this. It might not be for everybody. We're not saying everybody should have a blog. But if you want one, it's not.
That's right. It's within your grasp.
All right. So now we're going to go into the section. We talked a few minutes ago about how blogs should be niched to be effective. I mean, I would say a good example, another one just to sort of beat this to death, is, you know, that a lot of people these days have blogs on restaurants. You know, it used to be if you wanted to find out about a restaurant, you had to read the review in the local paper. When the web came along and blogs, a lot of people, I worked with a guy who used to be fanatical about this. Everywhere he went out to eat, he'd have a digital camera, he'd take photographs of the food, and he'd write his little restaurant critic reviews. The more popular blogs, believe it or not, are even niche there. There's one called Sky Full of Bacon, which is a blog just about eating bacon, raising hogs, and the whole thing, and they have thousands and thousands of visitors a week. Because if you're into food and restaurants, it's a pain to go through hundreds of blogs to find your review about bacon. So, point is, a niche is good, but if you've built the blog, if you've followed Jim's outline, what do you need to do to actually create the content? How do you create the content? Well, let's first of all talk about the best practices when you post, in other words, when you create a blog entry. The thing that tends to attract more readers is, A, it's like the newspaper industry, provocative headlines, such as how to or what in the world does this mean, you know, questions and examples like that, not just an update on, which isn't just provocative. When you're entering a blog posting, especially if it's more than a couple of paragraphs, break up the text with subheadings. Actually, I've heard Google actually picks up on those subheadings because of the HTML code. Like Jim showed you, you can build links into each post, and that's a good thing from the Google point of view because Google sees those links from your blog to other sites, and especially other people who might link to you in reverse, as good indications that your blog content is tied into the rest of the World Wide Web in a good way. Design matters. Like Jim explained earlier, the look of today's web isn't so dense and tight as it used to be. So white space is good. You know, look at magazines, see how they're outlined. And look at blogs you like to read, and you'll see with embedding of video and audio, you can make them multimedia. But most importantly, write relevant, specific content for the people who want to read the blog. The less general it is, the more it answers specific questions, the more valuable. That'll trump, like the Craigslist people know, it'll trump any fancy design. It's better to have really good content in a bland blog than not. Now, this is my blog, professionally speaking, with my handsome face staring out on the right side there. And I... let's see, I shot this screenshot actually a couple of months ago now. It was the most recent posting at the time. Of course, since then, I've done other postings that have pushed this down. And it shows that I embedded an image of the cover of this book I reviewed. I also have, as you can see where it says, The Pleasure and Sorrows of Work is in blue. That's because it's a link to the Amazon page. Actually, little secret, it's a link to the Associates page in Amazon. So if you were to buy this book through clicking on that link, I think I'd make 15 cents or something. But it adds up. I did once get a check for $10 from Amazon after 4 years of doing this. But you can do that if you wish. So this blog is on Professionally Speaking, and we'll talk about a little later some of the things I've done, such as I've allowed people to subscribe to the blog here through email, through a tool called Feedblitz, as well as down at the bottom, they can actually subscribe through what's called an RSS reader. Another blog from another colleague I used to work with, a guy who now works for Dell Computers, shows, actually I should have shown you on the previous page, let's go back a second. This actually goes on, and I tend to be somewhat verbose. I am a professional speech writer, and I guess I like the sound of my own voice or something, but I tend to write blog postings that are a screen or two in length. And they take a while to write. You know, there are postings. I'm a professional writer, so I tend to want to make them look good. But you don't need to have that. Take a look at Andy. Andy's blog, he's from New Zealand, by the way, just three lines. He says, you can download this fascinating master's thesis on blogging written by this guy, and it's worth a scan. So he's basically just pointing to something he found interesting, and people are responding, saying, well, great link. Thanks, Andy. So he's got his readers who follow him. They get this as an update. They respect his opinion, and it's like a well-known, well-informed, senior person in the field saying, I like this. Go check it out. That's perfectly legitimate. Not every blog needs to be, pages and pages. What you will find, though, is if you do have a blog and you want to keep it updated, I would say a minimum of kind of twice a month is a low minimum. You probably want to aim for an update once a week, and if you get into the swing of it, it's best not to do 5 updates a week and then nothing for a month. It's better to get some kind of a cadence, once a week, twice a month, daily, obviously. What I find is very valuable to get content is this tool, Google Alerts. You go to google.com/alerts, and if you're not familiar with this, it's an incredibly powerful tool. You can put in a keyword. For instance, everybody who's got any kind of a presence at all should put in their own name. So I have a Google Alert for my name. I actually say once a week. And anything Google finds with my name in it, or other people in the world, there's a bunch of Irish sports guys in Ireland who play the Irish football that they play over there who are called Ian Griffin. I guess it's a common name there. And a couple of other Ian Griffins in the world who get regularly flagged on Google. It'll send you that update, monitoring developing news stories, keeping current on a industry. So imagine your topic like mine, speech writing. I have a Google alert for speech writing, another one for public speaking. Sometimes I get once a day updates. Sometimes I never am short of content for my blog. That's a great tool. And here's the example of speeches. I've got one Google alert where I just put the word speeches. And once a week I get usually about 8 or 10 news stories from Google, from either news outlets or web pages or other blogs, which give me some, you know, it's like a personal assistant giving me some ideas that I can then use as fodder, for the want of a better word, for my blog. So the other thing that you have, of course, in a blog, and what's key to this whole series on social media, is you have the ability to engage in a conversation. Like you saw on Andy Lott's blog, people leave comments. And that's, you can turn comments off. I strongly advise against it. And in fact, I would strongly advise against deleting or refusing to approve any comments that might be even negative. Like, you just posted some rubbish and I disagree. That's good. It's debate. It gets people talking. And providing they're not just being, you know, like offensive, or you do have spam, of course, and the WordPress has a great spam filter to catch 99% of those. But here, the dating goddess that we talked about earlier, she actually has here a whole bunch of comments. Say this person says, hey, I'm a writer for the Mercury News, writing a story about dating over 50. Two people in less than 10 minutes told me you'd be perfect to interview. So, and there's a contact which you can contact him by clicking on here. This person says, wonderful blog. This person says, I'm very similar to how you describe yourself. And she lists here the most recent comments on her blog saying, join in the conversation. That is really one of the strengths of blogging. However, I would caution you, in my experience, don't get obsessed with like counting your comments every week. It's sometimes a bit like pulling teeth. Not as many. In fact, there's been somewhat of a drop-off in comments. And I was just reading an opinion piece this week, people attribute that maybe to Twitter. Maybe people are doing the debate more on Twitter. But anyway, comments are definitely to be encouraged. Here's a couple of comments that I received on my blog. Actually, what I want to illustrate here is one's from a guy called Walter, but I kind of do something that might seem a little weird at first. I leave comments on my own articles, not saying, hey, Ian, you wrote a really good thing. But I use it as a filing system. So if I remember as I'm reading the web, oh, here's something about podcasting and royalty-free music, I need to keep a record of that. Well, I go back to my podcasting blog entry that I did in October of 2008, and I just put the links in there. So I got them in one place, both for myself and for other readers. And I've probably done that 20, 30 times. As I find articles of interest, I'll go back to my own blog posting, so no matter where I am with access to the internet, I can easily find those. And by the way, if people ask me, for instance, about, Ian, I understand you do podcasting, can you tell me about it? I just send them the blog link. I say, oh yeah, I've written about it. You'll find my step-to-step guide, the handout, the slides, and I've got some resources in the comment file. It's all in one little online filing system. Now, there's also, of course, in creating a blog, as Jim said, the ability to manage the existing posts. You'll notice one thing I did is to make sure that in the categories or the tags, sorry, in the categories area, I did categorize them. So some blog postings are about business communications, public speaking, others are about speech writing. People can go to my homepage and just find those. But in these early postings from back in 2006. I started in February 2006, January, February. These were first half dozen blog postings I did. I wasn't using tags. And, you know, shame on me, because those tags are what Google likes to find in searches. And having tags like I did here, now I'm in 2009 and I've learned from the error of my ways, this blog posting, that one I showed you on the pleasures and sorrows of work, mentions accounting, there's the author's name, it mentions the firm Ernst & Young, an author called John Berger, Modern Life, actually talks about tuna fish and work. This means anybody searching on tuna and accounting, this regard, no, somebody might, you know, it's a big web out there, millions of people. So, you know, same here, the person I interviewed, Donald Hunter, it was a protracted profile from our National Speakers Organization. I put them in as tags, and it supplements the content actually in the blog posting itself. Moving along, I've talked about this earlier, I've forgotten I've got screenshots of it. So why blog? I mean, people ask me, well, do you ever make any money off blogging? Not directly, a few bits of loose change, maybe if I recommend books on Amazon through the associates. But if you put my name in Google, the number one Ian Griffin currently in the world is me, and notice it's my blog / blog that's returned. It's not, you know, my LinkedIn profile, it's not my other things in my website. By the way, I used to have the homepage here or Google all to myself, but unfortunately, back in the UK where I'm from, there's another Ian Griffin, my evil twin, this guy with blood pouring down his face, who rather gruesomely murdered his girlfriend in a Paris hotel room, and there was a manhunt for him back in May, and that pushed me off the front page for a good 3 weeks. But interestingly enough, now we're 3 and 4 months past that, I've returned to the number one position. It was a quite interesting dynamic. At first I was like, oh my goodness, I'm never going to get out from under this guy's shadow. Likewise, if you search for professionally speaking, the name of my blog is number one. Now, okay, professionally speaking, Ian Griffin aren't necessarily going to be search terms that my clients looking for a speech writer would enter. But if you look for speech writing, I'm not number one, because there's some people, by the way, over here, are all people paying 10 cents a click or 20 cents a click to be on the page. But I am, what am I, 2, 4, 6, I'm number 8 on the Google homepage. Again, because of my blog. I haven't done any search engine optimization. I've just got an awful lot of blog postings about my topic and people finding speech writing. It does lead to referral business for me. So the things to remember about content. First of all, continue to niche. Don't be afraid of a dialogue with the readers. We didn't touch on blog carnivals, but there's a whole area there that you can check out. Just Google blog carnivals. Build a repository of information like I do on podcasting and referrals, and blog beautifully. You know, think of the aesthetics, include video, include graphics, and so on.
All right. So, Ian, I'd like to add to your use of blogs and websites and why you use it. For my business, specifically my consulting and speaking business, I'd say 90% of the contracts that I get arise because I seek out customers and I submit proposals. And after the fact questionnaires to my customers, I've asked them, how did you determine I was the one to do the job for you? And they said the first thing that they did was looked up the name of the person who submitted the proposal. And for me, it was Jim Carrillo. And so I knew it was extremely important for my name to be owning that entire first page of Google. And I do. And I was recently contacted by a name twin, a gentleman by the name of Jim Carrillo that lives in Florida, and he told me that he was trying to start his own business and he wanted to know if I can give him any information on how he can get his name ranked higher in Google. And Ian, you know what I told him, right?
What's that?
I said I couldn't help him.
Yeah.
There was no way I was going to give up that standing. But at this point, what I'd like to do is remind you of a couple of other events that we have coming up. In the next two Wednesdays, we have podcasting and YouTube on the 23rd and Twitter integration. Now, I did notice that we had some folks ask questions on YouTube videos, and I think that would be a great one for them to watch next week, because we actually will show you how I create my YouTube videos. And I create them on the fly, and it is a very easy and simple process. And Ian, why don't you remind them about our practical social networking site?
Yeah, what we've got is in the in the far left corner here, you're participating in the free online webinar series, which we're now 3 weeks into. We've got 2 weeks to go, as Jim explained. And we have, this is a repeat of a series we did last month in the end of July and August. We'd encourage you to tell your friends if you found this information valuable, because next week they'll be able to find out about YouTube and podcasting. If you want to find out more about any of the topics we've discussed, including the questions, we've had quite a number of questions come up on the chat line that we won't have a chance to get to all of them, go to socialnetworking101.biz and click here to join the conversation. We'll take you to our homepage for a website where we have videos. I posted a video last week answering the questions that we didn't get a chance to get to. It's not this video with Jim. It's Jim behind the arrow there. It's another one that you'll get on the second page. We also have recordings of the webinars if you didn't manage to make them all. We have a clinic formula we're offering, and we are also available for live presentations and workshops.
That's right. And before we go, we do want to open it up to questions. And by the way, Ian, I did want to mention that some of the folks had some questions on the line about blogs and stuff. In that clinic, one of the things, I mean, we go over all the different social networks very detailed, but one of the things that you get as a member of that clinic is you get your own blog. We help you set up the entire blog through the WordPress Foundation, show you in a detailed way of how you can create your own web pages and blog posts and things like that. But, Ian, so let's see if we got some questions out there that we might be able to answer.
Yeah. So the questioning came in from one person is, what's best for a company? Is it a website or a blog? And, you know, in a way, that's a quick question. But, I mean, how do people choose? Are customers going to be attracted more to the blog or more to the homepage?
You know, that's right. Now, the trick question is, and Ian, I would say this, do you have a website or a blog?
I have both, and
exactly.
They're the same.
Exactly. They're the same. So, yes, every company should have a website. Every company should have a blog. And there you go.
Okay. You know, we're getting very close to the top of the hour, unfortunately. There is a number of questions which we got more detailed ones on how you can transfer an existing website to a WordPress blog. Do we recommend that? Yes, we do. You don't lose your existing URL. It's like having your house remodeled. You know, you still live at the same address. It just looks better inside. And we'll answer these via probably a quick YouTube video online. It'll be probably give us till the end of day Friday, maybe. And
that's
we'll have
right.
socialnetworking101.biz site.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
So that was exactly, I just wanted to reinforce that one. That you're seeing that on your screen right now. It's socialnetworking101.biz. And again, there are recorded versions of our webinars, all five of them there, that you can purchase and then download. And there's also a link that will take you to our community site. And on that community site is where we post the videos, and we will answer all the questions that we weren't able to get to, but hopefully we were able to answer your questions.
And actually, I think one of the things we haven't clarified is you can join this socialnetworking101.biz. It's a community where you can actually create your own blog right there without needing to go and develop anything in WordPress. It's all sitting there for you as kind of a sandbox. You can also post videos. You can have chat with it. We've got around 40 members. It's not necessary to join to find answers that we're going to post there. But if you're interested, if you want to, no charge, just join. It says join here or join up or something in the top right-hand corner. You can create a login. You can create a pseudonym if you want. Although in social networking, everybody these days uses their real name because why wouldn't you? You know, it's your brand. Don't get confused. It's not absolutely necessary to do that.
Right. Just a great way to practice. But if you'd like to stay in touch with either of us at any time, you can always reach me at me@jimcarrillo.com.
And I would be reached via ian.griffin@exec-coms.com.
And you can catch us online at socialnetworking101.biz.
And we'll be back next Wednesday at the same time to talk about YouTube and podcasting. So it's kind of the audio-visual multimedia whiz-bang webinar.
Great. All right. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
This has been an audio-only recording. For the complete webinar, including visual screen information, visit socialnetworking101.biz.